with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
By my count, on regulars on the podcast, we have Gundawans, Gundaguns, Gundians, and Gundogans.
Gundogan, isn't it, that Gaz says? Yeah. He actually pronounces the hard G, I think.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
So that, maybe that's five then.
Do you remember when Paul Merson called him Gundaland in his first season? I think he'd got a bit mixed up with who City were playing away, but yeah, Gundaland. So obviously, Dan, you're living out there with presumably know a few Turkish Germans. Is Gundogan correct?
It's Gundogan is how you're supposed to say it, I think.
Oh, God, there's a six pronunciation.
Ah, is there an umlaut in play?
There is an umlaut in play, yeah.
Ah, right.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
3 points at Stamford Bridge to set Manchester City off to the best possible start for the new season, and while it was a good performance and a good result, there was plenty of room for improvement as the players' fitness returns in the coming weeks. Still, a 2-0 win on the opening day is not to be sniffed at. We'll get into all of the talking points from that game on today's Blue Moon podcast. There's been a rare super blue moon this week. That's where there's a full moon while the moon is at its closest point in its orbit, and where it's the second full moon of the calendar month. Something so rare is perfect for the week where City face Ipswich Town for the first time in 22 years and for the first time in the league since they relegated City at Portman Road in 2001. We'll hear from Rich from the Suffolk Crunch to find out more about how they're feeling about this tie, and I'll explain why I've still not let that rivalry go for more than two decades. I'm David Mooney, and with me for this Super Blue Moon podcast is from Sporting News, Dom Farrell.
Hello.
And from One Football, Dan Burke.
Hello.
Hello. Well, since we're going to talk about me not being able to let one of my long-standing grudges go, do you two have any long-standing grudges that you'd like to air on at the start of the podcast? Dan, anything that you've not let go over the last kind of two, three decades or so?
Well, from a football perspective, I think the main one is I will always have referee Alan Wilkie on my shit list for his phantom penalty that he gave in that 1996 FA Cup tie at Old Trafford. I will never, ever forget that.
I get it.
Always be bitter about that, yeah. And from a similar time period, a non-football one actually, when I was at primary school, one of my teachers used to say, Burke by name, Burke by nature, about me, which has always stayed with me. Pretty horrible thing to say to a child, I would say. Yeah. But, you know, it's how I've lived my life thereafter, I guess.
Yeah, good. Don't ever let those grudges go. Dom, anything for you that still winds you up to this day when it shouldn't?
Well, continuing a theme of both an officiating howler and primary school, when I was playing for my primary school, I had a goal disallowed from a corner taken on the left wing by a left-footed player. This is important. I came at the back post and volleyed it home. Emphatically, I like to think. and so this is primary school football, so there's no linesman. The referee decided the corner had swung out of play.
Oh,
Now, so this is a grudge to a point that even now when I'm watching professional football with actual officials and cameras and all God knows what, if ever a player gets pinged for swinging an outswinger out of play, I'm like, nah, I don't think that's right. I'm always with the players on that one.
Can you be sure it didn't swing out of play, though?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it never went out. Definitely not. I'm sure on this. The conviction with which he blew his whistle was like, what are you doing?
Little Hitler type.
Yeah, good to continue the primary school theme after Auntie Josie's exploits last week.
Good. Well, I mean,
she had to give it.
We're going to get into my beef with Ipswich Town later on, but I mean, I've also got I have beef with Adam Lafondra, which is it all stems back to he was playing at Power League Stockport for a few years, and he was taking the piss out of basically. I used to play in a team that was me and like other kind of 19, 20 year olds and their fathers. So like, it was a mixture of players who were all kind of like in their early 20s, late teens, and players who were in their late 50s, early 60s. So there was a real kind of swinging quality and fitness in certain areas. And Adam Lafondre had a team there while he was playing for Stockport, and I've never let it go that he was a professional footballer coming down to a five-a-side centre to take the piss out of amateurs. Just like, it's one of those things that I've always had gripes on. And then like every time he scored in the Premier League, I was just thinking, that dick. Oh, all right, yeah, fine. Well done, mate.
Surely you could have it now that you could rock up to Power League facing Adam Lafondre, but with Nadum, Jolyon Lescott, Stevie Ireland, and go, right.
All right, lad.
Yeah, how do you like me now?
Yeah, your time has come. Yeah, I have grown into this mold. Yeah. Yeah, I'll give Nadum a call, see if we can sort that out. let's talk about City-Chelsea, because that's what the people are here for. They're not here to let us air our dirty laundry. Dan, a solid start. What do you make of the performance? I said in the intro, room for improvement. It all comes down to kind of the players and the fitness so far. But I guess it's kind of, if that's what they're going to be like when they're not fit and not ready, I mean, that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was a great result under the circumstances and a very good performance. I think it was one of those, there was a few hairy moments, wasn't there? And you know, if Chelsea got that equaliser just before half time, the second half could be a different game. If City don't get the second goal when they do, maybe Chelsea have another chance to get back into it and do so. Maybe on the balance of play, a win wasn't a entirely, I don't want to say it wasn't a fair result, but I don't think it was a sort of thoroughly deserved win. I've seen a lot of the sort of post-match analysis that City strolled it, City controlled it completely. I didn't really feel that was the case. I thought it was an entertaining game and it was a tough game, and Chelsea, you know, for all their faults, they've got some really talented players, and talented players can make things happen and make things difficult, and that was the case. But I think City did as well as could be expected to on the day. Some really good individual performances, great goals, and we take the 3 points from a ground that we didn't win on last season, a team that we didn't beat last season, and it's a great start to the season.
Yeah, and Dom, they did it without Rodri, which, I mean, first game of the season, no Rodri. Every single game without Rodri last season, they lost. So, I mean, that's an automatic improvement, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks like City have finally sorted that Ilkay Gundogan improvement. improvement replacement. Got so excited about my own joke and saying Gundogan's name correctly that I messed the whole thing up. I thought Kovacic played great. Enjoyed his goal from the point of view of he massively didn't want to shoot, did he?
He kept advancing it, and it was like, okay, well, somebody will be here for a pass in a second. Maybe I have to shoot. Oh, God, I'm going to have to shoot. And then, like, it somehow went in, yeah.
Yeah, instead of, like, the Aguero howling at company, the Vinny no-shoot thing, that was, like, Kovacic's internal monologue to himself, don't shoot, guess I'm going to have to. Yeah, but I thought he was brilliant. I thought Gary Neville giving man of the match to Bernardo Silva was a little bit surprising. I kind of got the logic that he was the guy, technically, who was in for Rodri and is the sort of the jack of all trades. Rico Lewis was wonderful, as he tends to be. I think that, so there was a thing that I know that from when Kovacic spoke to some of the guys who were on the preseason tour, and he was asked about playing in the Rodri position, and he said that he likes to have people close to him in that role. And I think that as soon as I saw that lineup, you can already imagine like where Lewis is going to go, tucking in from fullback, where Bernardo stays himself. Bernardo's also said his favourite position is playing next to the defensive midfielder. So I thought Kovacic was great. And if, of course, we have an imminent returnee, but if Rodri isn't there and you want Kovacic to do that job, having guys like Rico Lewis and Bernardo close by him, they all look really comfortable in their roles. I mean, I thought kind of everything at the back and through the midfield was really pretty good all the way through. I thought it was more in the final third, it was more hit and miss, particularly in the first half. But yeah, that those three little sort of pocket midfielders were all very, very good.
Yeah, we've kind of glossed over the three of them together there, Dan. Let's take a look at them individually. And we'll start with Kovacic, because as Dom was saying, he was a big part of the reason why City were quite comfortable in the middle. He could be really important this season, couldn't he? Like that's how his role can develop from last season, I guess.
Yeah. Ironic, really, that Gundogan's replacement had his best game as well, didn't he? So, yeah. You know, just before Gundogan's coming back, like that kind of complicates things a little bit. It's like, yeah, exactly. We finally got it. He's finally sort of looking like the player that we hoped he would be when he came in last season. All right, he had a pretty good season last year, but, you know, I don't think we saw the best of Kovacic at times last year. I think it was the sort of bedding in year, and the way he started this season was really good. You know, I think it's perhaps, you know, it's tempting to say, oh, there's the guy that can replace Rodri when Rodri's out. We've got it now. It's sorted. I think there were a few hairy moments with Kovacic as well, where he sort of lost the ball in midfield, but overall really good. The way he was sort of moving through Chelsea's midfield, we saw a bit of that in pre-season with a goal that he set up in pre-season where he just sort of burst through, glided past a couple of players. He did the same for his goal at the weekend. I don't know if that's something he's been instructed to do specifically by Guardiola, or just something that he's realised, oh, I can do this. Like, this is a part of my game that I can add. But that could be really, really important to City when it comes to breaking the lines and moving the ball through the midfield. And yeah, he was really tidy. He was fast into the tackles. He took his goal really well. So I'd have him as one of the candidates who can replace Rodri when Rodri's not available or needs a rest. I don't know if he's completely the player that we fall back on as that backup number six. But yeah, he had a great game.
Yeah, and Lewis, Dom, I mean, we've talked extensively in the past about how good he is. Guardiola was really impressed with him, like, again at the weekend. And I mean, he said the thing on Sky where he said, like, literally everything he does is fantastic, but the issue is that his height, he can't win high balls. Like, where do you think that stands him for this season? Because, like, ultimately, when he's in the pockets and when he's getting in on the underlap, on the overlap, and when he's on the ball in the centre of midfield, it's a real tour de force.
It is an unusual thing for Guardiola, like the guy who had that Barcelona team that came along at a time when football was all about power and strength and big guys, and he picked all these diminutive geniuses sort of doing their thing. It's a funny gripe to hear him have about a player who seems so suited to everything he does. Gripe might be the wrong word. I mean, you know, it's an observation, but it's always going to be there. Having said that, obviously, Pep has changed a lot since he's been in England, and there's a reason that he bought guys like Kyle Walker after his first season didn't go so well. But I just think there's an element with Lewis where it so rarely looks an issue. I remember one ball over to the far post during the game that flew over his head, and you'd think a more standard-sized defender might have dealt with that. But I just think he reads everything so well.
When he cut in front of Neto to get that ball behind, when I thought Chelsea were going to, I think it was 1-0 at the time. I thought they were going to equalise. Like, it's kind of like he read that situation so brilliantly.
Yeah, absolutely. His one-on-one defending was really good at the weekend. Because I think the first thing that catches your eye with Lewis, obviously, is how he's like a 360-degree footballer. He's really good in tight spaces. He judges all his 5-10-yard passes, all those fundamental things he does incredibly well. He's like intuitively just looks like almost like a purpose-built Guardiola player. And so then it's easy to think of, all right, well, this is a midfielder who's been shoved at fullback, like, which is, again, a very Guardiola thing. But yeah, defensively, I couldn't really have any complaints about him, which is kind of interesting when you look at, you know, well, I mean, obviously Kyle Walker the other night got in the PFA team of the season, so he must have been all right. But there were times last year when Walker, admittedly, being asked to do the fullback job in a different way, like sort of get all the way up and down the flank. So I would say some of Walker's defensive frailties last season were probably brought about by the massive workload that was getting put on him, both during games and across the season. But I think it's fair to look at it now that it's not like you'd be asking Lewis to come in instead of a guy who is defensively completely flawless at this point in Kyle Walker's career. And there's also an upside with Lewis that he can do things in possession that Walker just, well, he can't. And that's not necessarily a criticism of Walker, because Lewis is an exceptional footballer, but it's definitely something to think on for the manager.
Mm. Dan, do you see him playing more than Walker this season? Could this be the season where actually the youngster in relative terms, phases out the more senior player?
I don't know. I mean, I would like to see that, to be honest with you, and that's not really anything against Walker. You know, I've been a big fan of Walker as a player over the years. I think he's been a fantastic player for us and was decent last season. You know, he wasn't amazing last season, but he did his job and he was important to us and is the captain, of course, and that complicates things a little bit, I suppose, in that, you know, if he is still going to be club captain, which there's been no talk that he won't be, then that doesn't guarantee you a place in the team sheet, but it certainly influences decision making, and I think perhaps Lewis's age and status in the squad will influence Pep's decision making a little bit as well. You know, he's 19, he's an academy player. It's going to be an easier player to drop and keep happy, you know, with sporadic playing time than Walker. I think if Walker finds, you know, early or middle later in the season that he's not playing very much, he's not going to be happy with that really, and that's probably. He's probably been given some assurances about playing time, but all I would say about Lewis is I have never, and I don't think I ever will be, worried when I see his name on the team sheet. Like, quite the opposite. I rate him so highly. It's at the point where he doesn't even feel like a young academy player anymore. He feels like an established first teamer. You almost forget him when you're talking about up and coming players who could go on to be sort of a household name this season. I think he's already there. I think he was superb in that game at the weekend. Don't often watch compilations of fullbacks' performances, but I watched one of his on Twitter the other day. 2 minutes of him just shepherding players out of play. There was a one-on-one he had with Nkunku in the first half where he just dealt with it brilliantly. There was a great block that he made on the ball. He's superb going forward. He's really, you know, a good player as well. I could see him playing an attacking role at times as well and playing as more of a sort of winger or one of the number eight positions. I think he can do everything really, and you know, as they say, he's number 82 because he's an 8 and a 2 and combined he can be a 10 as well. So yeah, I think he's a superb prospect.
Have you just thought of that?
No, I stole that from Noisy Neighbours on Twitter actually, so I should credit them where it's due actually.
That's fantastic. Yeah, well done lads. I really like that.
Just on Lewis, like Dan said, when you see a team sheet, you don't think, the small midfielder playing at fullback. I guess the parallel in recent City history would be games when Zinchenko, you know, the periods when Zinchenko became first choice, and you know, there was maybe an acceptance he wasn't the most natural defender, but there was an awful lot he gave to the team when he was on form. But even when Zinchenko was playing well, there was always seemed to be a bit of a undercurrent of when the team sheet dropped. I don't think you get that with Lewis. I think Lewis is, at the very least, you're as confident as you ever were with Zinchenko, and maybe a bit more. And see, this is the thing, much like Walker, this isn't Alex Zinchenko slander in any respect. It's, you know, this kid's really, really good. And yeah. As much as Dan was saying then about, you know, maybe if Walker's been given assurances, he couldn't possibly have more assurances than last season over playing time. And that might put his nose out of joint. Are we not at the point where if you have a teenager of Rico Lewis's like exceptional ability, or Kyle Walker's 34 this season, I think. I think if you're going to piss anyone off, you piss off the old guy.
Yeah. Quick word on Bernardo as well, Dan. He was a little terrier all over the pitch, and it just him and Kovacic together works really well. And I'm kind of interested now where the balance lies between that and the answer of bring Gundogan back for when Rodri's not there. Because like ultimately, Gundogan, this would have been the second season for Gundogan in that 2-year extension that City didn't want to give him. So maybe the Gundogan answer isn't going to be as frequent as maybe some people expect.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people saying that Gundogan will come back and provide cover for Rodri as well, but didn't we try that and it didn't work? Like, I'm sure we tried that in a pretty high-profile game and it didn't work. A very high-profile game, the Champions League final, as we'll never forget. And, you know, I think Gundo can play that role, definitely. Part of me does wonder why he is being brought back. Is he actually the kind of player that the squad needs, given that Kovacic was brought in to replace him last year? You know, we kind of have enough midfield players when everyone's fit, and you wonder where they're going to get in, to the point where Bernardo, it feels like it's quite rare that he actually plays in midfield these days. A lot of the games that he played, especially towards the back end of last season, were out on the wing, where I think he's really effective and does a really valuable role for the team. It was really good to see him back in his favoured midfield position, you know, getting into the box, the way he set up that first goal, and like you said, doing the work rate is just incredible every time he plays, and the way that he links up with Kovacic is nice as well. So I'm just interested to see what Gundogan coming back does to the kind of makeup of the squad, really.
Maybe if... I mean, again, this is an idea that's literally just sprung to me as you were talking, but maybe if Rodri isn't available and Gundogan is the replacement, maybe it's Gundogan and Kovacic in the middle, Bernardo back out wide.
But then you have to drop a winger, don't you, as well? So again, yeah. That means Foden's not playing. That means, you know, Doku or Savinho aren't playing, you know, who were impressive at the weekend as well. So obviously it's great to have loads of options, isn't it? And I'm sure Guardiola has an idea for what he wants to do with the squad he's going to end up with. And I'm really glad that Gundogan's coming back. Don't get me wrong. It's just, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he sort of balances the minutes and keeps everyone happy.
Yeah. Let's talk about the opening goal, because Dom, I thought it was really interesting that Haaland said after the game that he remembered Sanchez staying back last year, so he took extra touches this year to be able to get into a position to finish it.
Yeah, that went straight into the robot hard drive, didn't it? he's it's a bit of a cliche, but he's obsessed about scoring goals, and That's sort of maybe the sort of phrase you can throw around a bit, but it's precisely those sort of details that will be in there. It was a lovely goal, like you say, the deft touches. I've heard some people compare it to R9 Ronaldo, sort of thing, of like seeing a big guy just have a little bit of dexterity in a tight space. Really good goal. And I know we've probably got to talk about he completed three passes or whatever, but I felt like he played well, and it's encouraging what he says about feeling pain-free, and keeping it that way is probably why, you know, City are still looking to bring some cover in, what with Alvarez having left. I think he looks like a guy who's benefited from a decent holiday and a long pre-season, and given he had this, you know, this fallow year of merely scoring 27 league goals last season, probably bad news for the rest of the division.
Yeah, it is interesting, Dan, because as on the one hand, as Dom says, you've got that only three completed passes thing. That stat doing the rounds of kind of, oh, well, you look at kind of the involvement that he is, he's just a goal scorer, all that sort of stuff. He joked on Sky afterwards about that he wasn't needed in City's link-up because the defenders and the midfielders were playing through the lines so well and he could just watch it. I think his line was, Pep won't thank me for saying this. And then at the same time, you've got like City as a Guardiola team. Everybody normally pulls their weight. And yet, at the same time, he scored 91 goals in 100 appearances. So like my brain cannot compute the two things together. Like is it just one of those things that we have to accept that it will always be talked about, that he doesn't get involved, he scores goals, and it's like, it's a benefit to City when he's there because he scores goals, but City can also operate when he's not there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that three completed passes stat is just meaningless, really, isn't it? Because one of my complaints about him in the past has been that sometimes his link-up play with the players around him hasn't been very good. Even simple layoffs he struggles with sometimes. He'll try and pass the ball out to the wing, it goes out of play. I don't remember anything like that frustrated me during the Chelsea game. A lot of the Chelsea game was wing play from City, was them getting the ball out wide, not delivering great crosses to him for the most part. You know, he's waiting in the middle for a good cross. They didn't come in. When they did come in, he scored, and he had a really good chance and forced a good save out the goalkeeper in the second half. You know, he's just there, isn't he? He's there. He's giving the defenders something to think about all times. His movement's really good. He can spring into action and score, you know, an incredible amount of goals. So it's not a problem for City at all. And I've been critical of him in the past. He does frustrate me the way that sometimes he's not in games. But I think that's kind of by design at this point. I think you just have to say that City have adapted to playing with a player who doesn't drop back, who doesn't get involved in the play very much, who is there just to finish the chances. And 91 goals in 100 Premier League games. Is it 100 Premier League games or 100 games?
I can't remember, but it's 100. 100 so it's 100 it's, something, yeah.
It's not a bad ratio, games. Is it? Yeah. So, yeah, you can't argue with that. He's been an outrageously good signing for City, and he'll continue to be, you know, he is the best number nine in the world, and will continue to be so. And hopefully we can get a bit of better service to him this year. We can get some of those crosses into him, and you know you can see they're trying to sort of stand crosses up to the back post a little bit now, aren't they? And if they can get a few more of them on his head, then you know his heading might need to improve a little bit.
Because he can miss them from close range.
Yeah,
can't he?
But you know there should be plenty more goals coming his way this season. And you'd be an idiot to predict anyone else to win the Golden Boot again.
Yeah. Let's talk about the wingers, Dom, because as Dan says, they were quite key to City's performance. Were you surprised to hear Guardiola say that Doku and Savinho just swapped on their own?
Not entirely. So I've sort of thrown myself into Marty Perenau's latest Guardiola opus this week.
And latest tome.
Yeah, it's. I mean, how many pages do you need for a tome?
Oh, that's it. I'm going to find out live now.
It's nearly 600. I think we're in tome territory there, aren't we?
How many pages is a tome?
A weighty one, no less.
Google reckons tomes are over 500 pages.
There we go. We're in tome territory. yeah, by the way, weighty tome. I mean, you're not going to have a light one, are you? I mean...
What? Maybe if it's an e-book.
Kindle tome. Other reading devices are available. So mid-tome, I've discovered that when Juan Malilo came to City after Liverpool won the title and during that lockdown season, one of the big sort of influences he had on Guardiola was to try and get him to chill out a bit, to kind of step back a little bit and let the players problem solve. And it seems like this was a bit of a departure from how Pep had worked previously in all his other jobs. And I say I've not got to the end of said tome yet, but it seems like that's going to be key to why he's stayed. It's one of the reasons he stayed at City so long. You know, him being more relaxed, not being as intense. By going to the players, look, I've given you sort of the map, all the things to do. You know, make decisions by yourself. So knowing that, I didn't find it surprising hearing him say it. I would question whether it was a tactical bit of intuition from Doku, or he'd had such a bad first 10 minutes he wanted to run away from the dugout, which would be fair, because there were some things Doku did in that those first 10 minutes where you don't really want to be on Guardiola's side after pulling those out of the bag. Then after that, it led to the sort of most impressive period of the first half. I think they both had their fullbacks on toast. And yeah, it was exciting to see.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Dan, I can't get my head around Doku's performance, because there was some there were some moments in there that were utterly fantastic. Like the way, certainly in the second half, when he skipped through about four players to get into the box, and I thought I didn't see how he kind of manoeuvred the space to be able to find that route into the box. And then his pullback doesn't go anywhere near a City player. Or like that shot that he had in the first half where like he's a perfectly good opportunity in the centre of the box under a little bit of pressure, has a bit of a swing on his left foot and it ends up near the corner flag. And then a couple of minutes later, he has a shot that forces Sanchez into a great save. It's like it was sublime in one instance, it was ridiculous in other instance, and I just can't work out whether he played well or not.
Yeah, I think if he had end products, he'd be better than Pele, but it's quite a big if at the moment, isn't that the problem with him? You kind of think like, come on, Jeremy, come on, just do something with it. Like, well, he's doing things with it, he's getting there, and it's just that last pass or that last shot that's lacking. And I really like him and I really rate him, and I think I'm really excited about him. I like him when he plays, he gets you off your seat. And I think it's just one of those that it's just going to take a little bit of improvement, hopefully. He'll just get it. He'll get that kind of clinical nature to his game, and then he'll be a world beater. And we'll have to just be a bit patient with him till then. But yeah, I thought the game he had at the weekend was superb. And I think like one of the reasons that you don't often see this kind of old-fashioned style winger playing on their stronger foot, you know, the way that City started the game and rounding the fullbacks, is because the fullbacks have become really, really athletic. It's been, you know, an evolution of the game, hasn't it, that fullbacks are like now fast and quick, fast and strong and you know, hard to beat. And, all right, Savinho had the beating of Cucurella a few times when he swapped over, but Gusto on the other side, I think, was going to be hard for Savinho to get past at times. So I think it was sensible for them to swap over and for them to open that other avenue of attack, really, where they're coming in and onto the stronger foot and opening up the play a bit and giving the fullback something else to think about instead of just defending down their side. So I think that's the way to go with those two players in particular, to have them as inverted wingers, really. I don't know if they'll go with the traditional sort of winger again anytime soon. But yeah, I think Doku, you know, once he gets there, if he gets there, he'll be a superb player. But it's just a bit frustrating at the times to watch him.
We only see the good bits of Pelé now anyway, don't we? I mean, he might have been duffing crosses over everyone's head all afternoon.
I was going to say, do you not remember Fantasy Football League?
Pelé was shite, yeah.
Pelé was shite, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but he scored over 1,000 goals, didn't he? So, you know.
Okay, with the source for that being Pelé. The last thing on Doku is I would say it's fair enough is because he didn't start. The first 10 minutes of the game were a bit sort of Doku was shite. But he's pretty relentless. I mean, there are some wingers who if they would have a cross or a shot like that early on, it might get in their head a bit. But he's always going at his fullback. And I thought maybe his best bit of the game was the last 20 where Gusto sort of had the look of a man of like, can you just turn it in, mate? He's always at his fullback. And also people talk about, I mean, I don't know if this will be the conversation around this season, but the contrast between Doku and Grealish. But I think one thing Doku is getting better and better at is knowing when to kind of just get a foot on it and keep possession, and he can kind of
rein it in. Yeah.
Yeah. Controlling the tempo is getting there as well. So yeah, there's might be better than Pelé yet. Who knows?
Yeah. Quickly on Savinho, Dan, you talked about him having the beating of Cucurella. He was really, really good certainly for the latter part of that first half. So how frustrating that he had to come off.
Yeah, it was annoying. Yeah, I mean, Guardiola played down the injury afterwards, didn't he? And hopefully that is the case and it's not anything serious, because I was sort of looking at, you know, the way that he played, how exciting it was, and looking at him coming off with a knee injury and thinking, oh, is it going to be one of them where he gets a serious knee injury and he's out for 2-3 months now and we have to wait and see what he can bring. But yeah, he looks like a superb addition to the squad. You know, the comparisons with Mahrez are there plain to see, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do. And it's just a shame that his full debut was cut short like that, because he was having a great game. And I think, you know, Foden showed when he came on that he's not there yet. He's not fully fit yet. He didn't do an awful lot when he came on. Grealish obviously has had that injury and maybe would have been the substitution for Savinho at half time had he not had that injury, you know, because he's got a big season ahead of him now. But yeah, I'm really impressed with Savinho. Saw fleeting glimpses of him in La Liga last season and thought he looked really good. And I think he'll be a really great addition for us.
Yeah, and final word of the first part of the show, Dom goes to Edison. Bit of a lucky boy with that one that he spilled. However, again, in this kind of mixed bag performances, there was a brilliant point-blank save, I thought, at 1-0, plus the usual calmness on the ball.
Yeah, he might be a bit of a lucky boy on both those incidents with Nicholas Jackson not being particularly good. but no, I mean, obviously, it'll take time, but he will get over being completely rattled by Sam Lee, I think, and we'll probably have a good season.
Yeah, it was kind of a funny one watching City in that first half as well, Dom, where they were passing it out from the back, and there was a couple of times where they just bypassed him entirely, but played a pass that was like 2 yards in front of goal, completely along the goal line. I was just like, oh, is this how deep we're doing it from this season?
Yeah, that is one where, as much as Ortega is perfectly competent on the ball, very good on the ball, you don't do that sort of nonsense with anyone but Edison in goal, do you?
Yeah.
It's like that. It is as much as, you know, he kind of did change how people think about goalkeeping in this country, maybe world football, the way that he just changed the entire picture. I think that when the dust settles, you'll be able to make a very strong argument he was Guardiola's most important signing at City. And it's things like that. It's maybe not even the things that he does. It's the things that everyone else feels capable and comfortable of doing that pretty much no other team can have that. Because, I mean, Robert Sanchez is someone who's viewed as being decent with his feet, but his part in Kovacic's goal wasn't great. And I think he falls into a bracket of there's quite a lot of more modern goalies now who are good with their feet. But then there's been Edison with your feet, which is a category of one still, I think.
Yeah. Right, it's time to talk about Ipswich. Younger fans might not realise the importance of the fixture this weekend. Ipswich at the Etihad, the first time the two teams have met since a mini rivalry at the turn of the century. For a period of about 2 years between 1999 and 2001, I hated Ipswich. In fact, I absolutely fucking despised them. It might seem like there's no reason whatsoever, so let me explain. The year was 1999 and City had just been promoted back to the second tier. It was difficult to know what to expect. City were one of the bigger names in the league and were ultimately aiming to get back into the top flight, but they were still a newly promoted side. After a slow start, Joe Royle's team won five in a row, and by late September they were 2 points off the top, with two games in hand. Then came Ipswich at Portman Road.
Clapham finds Croft, and it takes a deflection off Johnson! Diverting flick from Johnson, but Ipswich are back in the lead. Ipswich will be disappointed. It's a good take here, but look, where's the closing? Nolan comes to him, and then it's deflected past the goalkeeper.
At that time, we didn't know what rivals Ipswich would be that season, and it was a rivalry that was made all the more weird by a quirk of the fixture list. The reverse game at Main Road was played just 31 days later. That was a 1-0 City win with an extraordinary performance by goalkeeper Nicky Weaver.
I always remember when he was to play against Ipswich, it always seemed to be me against Richard Wright, because we were both in the England under 21, so they always used to make a little bit of thing about that. I think we played in the 99-2000 season. I think I probably had my best ever game in a City shirt against Ipswich at Main Road, and we won 1-0, and Kevin Orlock scored the winner.
This game was the Ipswich hell on a recent Patreon show. Here's Rich from Talking Town chatting about it with Dan Burke.
We absolutely battered you in this game. we played you in September on a Sunday at Portman Road and beat you 2-1. And it was like about 3 or 4 weeks later, we're playing you again, and you think, this is a bit weird. Nicky Weaver that night, he was absolutely incredible. He was saving everything.
Yeah, the one I remember, I think Rich might have mentioned it actually, it was probably the last one of the game. The ball comes off the bar, and I think it was Jamie Scowcroft just had a header into an empty net, basically. And Weaver kind of swats it away off the line, and it's just an unbelievable save. I mean, you think about the sort of the greatest goalkeeping performances in City's history. There's probably Bert Troutman in the 1954 FA Cup final, Joe Hart in Camp Nou, and Nicky Weaver against Ipswich. I think they're the three. Like, it was that good.
So, why the rivalry? Well, it all comes down to the end of that season and what happened the next. The two sides had played each other twice by the end of September, but by the end of May, one of them was going to win automatic promotion, and one of them was going into the Division 1 playoffs.
You pipped us to second spot on the last day of the season. You played Blackburn, didn't you, away that season. You were losing 1-0 at half-time, and we had Walsall at home. And I remember the celebration. David Johnson scored just after half time, and everyone went absolutely bananas. And then you ended up winning 4-1, and it was like something to put a pin in our balloon, and it just died.
The thing that might make you feel worse about that final day of the season, Rich, as well, is that Blackburn hit the post and the crossbar four times before City equalised.
I think it was three or four times. Did you take about 10,000 there or something? Masses, weren't they?
Ipswich followed City into the Premier League by winning the playoffs. Once there, the two teams had entirely opposite fortunes. Ipswich were heading for the UEFA Cup. City, meanwhile, were heading back for Division 1. Their first meeting was a 3-2 defeat at Main Road in the November, where at one point, City were losing 3-0.
3-0 down to Ipswich, and the atmosphere is starting to get a bit toxic at Main Road at that point. Everyone's sort of seeing the way the season's going and getting a bit fed up with things. I remember a guy sitting near me in the stand going, the load of shite, these lot, sell a lot of them, just sell all the players, they're rubbish. And it was really, really just not good at all, and we were just jealous of Ipswich, weren't we, basically, after the season that they were having. That should have been us, we thought.
Despite doing badly in the league at that point, City were having a good run in the Worthington Cup. But at the quarter-final stage, they drew Ipswich at Main Road. The first game ended up being abandoned because of the weather. Nicky Weaver played in that one.
We started the game and then a deluge come down, and it was just sort of unplayable. I think, I might be wrong here, We might have been 1-0 down at the time.
My memory of it is that Paul Dickhoff equalised and Graham Paul called it off immediately, almost as if to say, right, okay, it's all square now, I can do it.
There we go then, yeah. So we was 1-0 down, obviously, and yeah. So yeah, I suppose at 1-1 it's easier to call a game off than 1-0, isn't it?
In the replay, while City were leading 1-0, the referee, Graham Paul, somehow missed a clear penalty when Herman Hreiðarsson kicked Kevin Horlock in the head, leaving him with a Terry Butcher-esque bandage and a blood-soaked shirt. From there, Ipswich equalised and won the game in extra time to set up a semi-final tie with Birmingham. The next time the sides met would be another painful day for City. As it stands, the 2-1 defeat at Portman Road that season was the last time that City were relegated from the Premier League.
We'd have sort of needed a miracle. I think that was like with three games to go, something like that. I'm sure it was on a Monday night as well. We'd have needed to sort of win every game to stay up. So it was going to be really difficult, but obviously that was the sort of, you know, final nail in the coffin, if you like. And yeah, so that was obviously very disappointing to go down at the first attempt and ultimately, you know, cost Joe Royle his job.
Nicky Weaver didn't play in that game, but Steve Howie did.
I hadn't been relegated before. I was at Newcastle when they'd been relegated, but I wasn't like a main player. I mean, I made my debut at 17, but the team had already been relegated. But being kind of one of the main players that played a good few games for the team, you obviously take a lot of responsibility for it. And all lads did. And we just knew that we weren't good enough.
Defender Spencer Pryor was another who was part of that squad.
We were fighting. We were fighting to stay in. I don't think we... You tend to finish up where you deserve to be. And we were still going to try and keep fighting and fighting and fighting till the end. And we were quite a tight-knit group. But it was a shock and it was a disappointment. But it had been building through the season.
There was one final kick in the teeth to come from that game too. City fan Murd explains why he took that one so personally.
We always knew you had that creeping death that we were going down anyway, but they then unfurled a banner reflective of the famous programme at the time. They unfurled a banner in their end saying, "You are the weakest link, goodbye." And every time Ipswich lose a game of football now, you can guarantee from any like-minded City fan, they will just put a picture of that banner up. City fans never forget.
City had the chance to enact a little bit of revenge the following season, though, when they knocked Ipswich out of the FA Cup live on BBC One. City, top of the second tier, went to Portman Road again, while Ipswich this time were bottom of the Premier League, and they ran out 4-1 winners. Saturday, though, will be the first time the two teams have met in the league since the day that Ipswich sent City down.
Hi, this is Kevin Horlock, and you are listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was a look back at the games that City and Ipswich played around the turn of the century. Listening to that was Rich from the Suffolk Crunch. Hi, Rich.
Good afternoon, guys. How are we all doing?
Not too bad, thank you. I mean, let's start there then, because you must be absolutely delighted that Ipswich are still in my head from all those years ago.
I mean, I can't believe that was, 24 years ago when we last played you. And it's both clubs have sort of gone in different directions, haven't they, since then. Obviously, we've been to the depths of League One, where you had visited before, whereas you are now going for your fifth Premier League title on the bounce.
Yeah, it kind of everything turned out all right in the end. And Dan, I guess that's why you think I should let it go.
I think you should, to be honest, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, do you not reflect on that time and kind of just think back to kind of all those things, like the relegation at Portman Road and everything else, like that really, really, really hurt, mate.
The "You are the weakest link, goodbye" banner still rankles. Let's not beat around the bush about that, I suppose. But yeah, that was a bit of a piss take. But yeah, I mean, these things happen, don't they? We came up with Ipswich, I remember. Playing them at Main Road that season in the Premier League, they did us 3-2, and that scoreline really flattered City that day. I think it was 3-0 at half time, and that was the day I think it was before Christmas, I thought, we're relegated here, we're going down, it's not good this. And then you know, as it happened, we went down, we rebuilt. Ipswich finished fifth that season, didn't they, back in the Premier League, and then got relegated the following season. So, you know, we went in different directions, as Rich said, and the rest is history.
Yeah, Dom, are you as bitter about that time as I am? Please, somebody must be.
I don't think I am. I mean, to sound like quite sort of sanguine about it, I think when you get relegated, it's your fault, really. you couldn't really blame it too much. I mean, I think it did start to get to me a bit, particularly with, I mean, you mentioned in the recording that there was that postponed game, like with the deluge. It was funny that, I mean, your take is that Graham Paul was right. It's level now. I can call myself that getting lynched. I do seem to remember that City were absolutely awful and then put together this wonderful flowing move for Dickoff to score, at which point Paul's gone, well, something must be right then. If these jokers are putting passes together, it must be unplayable for normal football teams. So, but yeah, like it's because Ipswich had that sort of white and black or grey and black away kit, and it seemed that like City were playing Ipswich at home every other week towards the end of 2000. And Marcus Stewart was making merry. Tony Mowbray was there looking like the world's oldest man in defence when I get past him. Matt Holland, James Scowcroft. So, yeah, all right, maybe I'm more out of the long because I can remember all that team. it's Heide Helgeson as well, was it?
No. Yeah. Herman Hrideson. Yeah.
Herman Hrideson, yeah. Sorry. Mixing up my Scandinavians and stuff. Yeah, so it did seem like there was a period at which, like Dan alluded to, 3-0 up before half time. So we're playing Ipswich home again and just conceding loads of goals to these lot. And I guess by the time it got to the Portman Road relegation game, I think for a long time, there was those Ipswich games in 2000, but there was also around Christmas that year where City let in 4 goals in back-to-back home games against Leeds and Charlton, this is done. And it looked an awful lot like a team that had come all the way up from Division 2 and were out of their depth, which was the case, but again, with that Joe Royal team, that like sort of magic things had happened. Going into that game at Portman Road, there'd been a win against Leicester, got a result at Old Trafford for the first time since, what, the early 90s, and then beat West Ham at home. And it's like, hang on, is this happening? And then when Goethe scores, you're thinking, hang on a minute.
It's on, And then it suddenly wasn't on, and that's what annoys me.
By the way, but with that, so when Goethe scored, like he did his shoulder, didn't he? And then Spencer Pryor came on. Now, to say that if there's any bit of that game that lives rent-free in my head, it is that moment. And it's no disrespect to Spencer Pryor, who was a fine part of that promotion team. But I never liked bringing on an extra... When you've got two centre-backs, you'll believe that night would have been Dunn and Howie. You've got two centre-backs who were playing perfectly well. And so many teams still do it now. And you think, all right, these guys are seeing the game out. Let's shove someone in the middle of them so no one knows who they're marking anymore. You know, and maybe Martin Royce might score a header. even to this day, like, it seems to happen quite a bit when teams will bring on an extra defender and then they let the goal in. To this day, if a team does that, me and my dad refer to it as, oh, they've done the Spencer Pryor substitution.
Good. So it does live rent-free in your head. Excellent. Yeah, I'm not the only one. There we go. right, Rich. Ipswich now, though, completely different beast. You must you must be happy with where things have been recently. So first game against Liverpool. I thought you looked pretty decent against Liverpool, actually, and gave them a good hour to start with. What's the start of the season been like for you?
Well, we've made 9 signings, and I think the most important signing this summer was keeping hold of, obviously, the manager, Kieran McKenna, because he was obviously linked with Brighton, Chelsea, Man United. And you're thinking he's the key to, obviously, what we've done in the last 2 seasons. And you think if he goes, you're probably going to struggle a little bit, like Leicester, obviously, Steve Cooper. And for me, it had to be Kieran who's in charge that first game against Liverpool. And look, I thought we played really well for 45 minutes, but it's like in the back of your mind, you know, like it's looking forward to Saturday when you're thinking you'll do well for so long, but these teams have got the ability to just kill you off in, like, they scored 2 goals in 5 minutes. But there was a lot of positives to take out of that game. But Saturday, I'm not really expecting a lot, if I'm honest. You know, I don't think there's any Town fans who are travelling up or going to be listening or watching wherever, are really going to think that we're going to do anything. But I think we're going to have a positive season. I know a lot of the bookies have got us down as obviously the favourites, which is only natural, you know, us, Leicester and Southampton. Some people say that's probably lazy, but with our transfer business that we've done so far, I think it shows that we are going to have a right go at it. And look, if we're not good enough, and we go down, so be it. But I think part of being a football fan is you've got to have that hope and that expectation. And it's, we look at our neighbours Norwich, who've come up, I think, two promotions over the last few years. But every time they came up, they never really spent any money and never really had a go. I know they did roll over you boys, which I still can't quite believe how they beat you. But, yeah, and then they go back down and take the money, which, look, a lot of teams will do that because it changes your football club overnight, you know, that money that you're getting. But I want us to just this season have a go. And if we're not good enough, so be it. But I think we will. I think we'll surprise a few people this season. I think we really will.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu with new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
City haven't lost at home since November 2022. Is that intimidating for you?
What a great stat. And then I was watching the game on Sunday and they said, this is Haaland's 100th appearance and he's got 91 goals and 15 assists. And you're thinking, like, is it intimidating? Well, it probably is. We're coming to a stadium, you know, like you say, you've got that record. But this is why we've worked so hard over the last 2 years, going to grounds like Akron and Stanley and Fleetwood. And Saturdays, it's a free game for town. You know, it's, you could say like the Liverpool and City games. I know in football you never want to go onto the pitch thinking you're not going to win or get a result. But it's, you could probably use them games as an extended pre-season because realistically you're not really going to get anything out of them two games. I've sort of, you've wrote them games off already. But you need to take some positives obviously from it, which we did on Saturday's game against Liverpool. So I'm just hoping that the one thing I want from Saturday, the takeaway is that we make you earn the result. Don't give you anything. And if you beat us 4 or 5, so be it. But you do that to a lot of teams. So, yeah, we just got to go there and just enjoy the day. We've sold out, so the crowd are being good voice. One thing I will tell you is the Scousers on Saturday, when they come to Portman Road, they brought 3,000 fans and their support was absolutely pathetic.
Terrible gallery. Yeah.
Fleetwood Town bought 66 on a Friday night and made more noise than they did.
Excellent. Well, we hope to deafen you with our silence at the Etihad, and that'll intimidate your players. Well, no, I have to play in the quiet. That'll do it. Dan, there is also an argument here as well that I mean, don't get me wrong, City are obviously still filled with quality, but we just talked for half an hour about the Chelsea game and about City still coming back up to fitness. There's probably not, like, if you're gonna have, when you have to go to the Etihad, first kind of away game of the season is probably the one, isn't it? Like, you're most likely to get anything, I guess.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, you could look at it the other way and say that we'll have had a week's more training by then, and we'll be, you know, looking pretty sharp, and Rodri will, you know, probably start the game and come back in, and we'll have you know, maybe Gundogan will be in the squad, and we'll get a nice little bounce from that, and we'll go out and steamroll Ipswich. I don't know. I mean, I like the look of Ipswich in that game. It's like you said, the first hour they were really good against Liverpool. Liam Delap was a handful up front. Obviously, we know a bit about him. I really like the look of Omari Hutchinson as well. So I think he'll give City a few things to think about at the weekend. But, you know, looking at it, we'll want to stamp our authority on the game and on the league and our first home game. Pick up where we left off in that Chelsea game, maybe correct a few of the things that went wrong in that Chelsea game and try and have a little bit more control over the game. Maybe Grealish is ready to start this game and we have a little bit more control over it and we go for the win. But yeah, I think I'm confident that we'll get the win, but I wouldn't say it's a complete gimme that we're going to go out and completely you know, steamroll Ipswich, because I think they've got some players that can cause us problems.
Yeah, Dom, for obviously, again, like compared to the Chelsea game, like Dan says, City are another week on. How much different do you anticipate the team being? Because they've had a week to kind of get a little bit more fitness into these players. But at the same time, like, Guardiola doesn't have to make the changes that he would if they were playing twice a week at this stage.
No, I mean, Rodri's the obvious one, as Dad mentioned, but I guess you could make the case it's going to be a long, old season. Particularly, I mean, we don't know if everyone's going to be on strike for it or not, but this preposterous Club World Cup in America, you know, you're talking like 11-month season. Obviously, I mean, you'd imagine Foden starts after coming on. He was the only one of the England boys who got a run out last weekend, sort of played 45 minutes. That probably wasn't the plan, but like Savinho's injury forced their hand a bit. But I think, I mean, as we discussed earlier, the fact that so much of, certainly in terms of the build-up and controlling the game against Chelsea, looked in good order, he doesn't really like to change too much when it's one game a week and those sort of boxes have been ticked. So, yeah, I don't expect too many changes, really, from last weekend. Q7, but
yeah. Rich, for Ipswich, Dan's run through a few players there that he's worried about. Who's likely to cause the upset if Ipswich are to get a result at the weekend?
Well, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head. Obviously, Liam Delap, who you know quite a bit about. He played really well on Saturday in the first half, and he gave Konsa a lot of problems and sort of led to Slot making a change. He brought Konate on. So hopefully him. I thought he was good. He can run the channels. He's really quick. He was quicker than like I thought he was when he was at Hull. So obviously him and look, Omari Hutchinson. I think as a lot of Town fans, he was the one that we wanted to re-sign. Obviously we had him on loan last season from Chelsea. That was his first senior football. He played a couple of sub appearances for Chelsea, but yeah, he had over 50 appearances, 10 goals, and he was towards the end of the season. He was probably one of the main reasons why we got promoted, and I think he's going to be a real key player this season. And yeah, I'd probably go for them too. But it's look, it's when we get the ball on Saturday, because we're not going to get a lot of the ball. I think we know that, and if we do, there was times against Liverpool in that first half where we had some good situations, and it was just that final like pass. And when you're in the Premier League and when you're playing against the top players, if you get any chances, you've got to stick the ball away. So I'll be happy if we get a corner on Saturday, to be quite honest.
I was going to ask kind of in terms of kind of how Kieran McKenna will play. Are you quite quick in the counter? Do you have players who can counter quickly?
Yeah, well, Wes Burns normally would play, but he hurt his hamstring, so I think he probably drops out. We've obviously signed Sammy Smodics from Blackburn, so I think he'd come in. But I think on Saturday, Kieran tried. It was in the last friendly when we played Nice. We normally play 4-2-3-1. Like last season, we were really open. We conceded a lot of goals, but we scored, like, I think it was 96 goals. And obviously, now you're in the Premier League, you're going to have to tighten up. And I wouldn't be surprised on Saturday if he plays three at the back and he plays wing backs. I think that's probably the way to go. He could add another body in midfield. We signed a lad called Jens Kajust from Napoli. Obviously, Calvin Phillips, we got on loan from you, but he can't play. So yeah, look, it's going to be tough. And I just think we need to be a bit more pragmatic this season, because it's all right in the Championship because we were scoring goals. But I think we'll score goals. I don't think we'll have a problem scoring goals. It's at the other end, you know. You just got to keep them out. And you see on Saturday, it was 0-0 after, 55 minutes. By 60 minutes, we were 2-0 down and the game had gone. So that's what can happen when you're playing against, like, Salah on Saturday. First half, didn't really get a kick. Within about 15 minutes of second half, he's got an assist and a goal. So it's so brutal, the Premier League, you know. And it's going to be... it's going to be a massive learning curve these first few weeks. And we probably won't be up to speed with, like, we've signed 10 players now. I think we're signing Brozier from Chelsea. He's reportedly going to come in on loan. I wouldn't think he'd start Saturday, probably on the bench. But I think you've got that international break, that you've got another 2 weeks training. So probably by it's Brighton and Southampton, we've got away after the international break. We'll be getting up to speed then. But look, it's going to be really, really tough this season. I personally think we'll have enough to stay up, but it's like every single point that you earn, you will have to work really hard. And they showed on Sky on Monday Night Football, like, all the running stats and all the sprints. We were top, I think, of everything this weekend. And that's all I ask for is just to work hard and give it a go. And I think we'll give it a go all season. And I think McKenna, look, he's one of the best. I personally think he's one of the best young coaches in Europe. And I think for him this season, it is a free hit because we've got here a lot quicker than I think even the club expected. You know, coming from League One and going straight through the Championship, that was pretty unexpected. I think if we had a top half finish, I personally would have been really happy last season. But I don't think it affects him, whatever happens this season. And I think while Kieran's here in the dugout, it'll be great to see him up against Pep on Saturday. Mm. While he's here, we just got to enjoy it, because I'm wise enough to know that McKenna will move on, and it could be at the end of the season. If we have a really good season this season, he might even appear up the road at your neighbours.
Yeah, that's a thought to turn anyone's stomach, really. Dan, when you look at City squad and everything for this game, is there anybody that you'd like to see given a chance this weekend that didn't feature against Chelsea? I mean, we talked earlier about the wingers situation. I'm wondering if this is one for Grealish.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the bench on Sunday, and it was Foden, Walker, Stones, Ake and Grealish all on the bench. It wouldn't surprise me if all five of them started this game and Pep really rotates and gets them in quickly. I don't know if wholesale changes like that is necessarily a good idea sometimes, but you know, they're all top class players who've got a lot of first team experience, who are really valuable players in the first team. So, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing at least three of those coming in, I guess. You know, it'd be nice to see Stones getting a game early, getting his season going, because we know that he can be a bit of a slow starter sometimes. I would imagine that Lewis might drop out, which is going to be unfortunate for him and undeserved after what a good game he had. But I've got a feeling Pep's going to want to get Walker in the team quickly. And if Ipswich do have that counter-attacking threat, then Walker is always obviously really valuable for that. And I would like to see Grealish come in as well. Maybe Savinho. I still want to call him Savio, by the way.
I've settled on Savinho, largely because it's got an extra syllable and it's nicer to say. I don't know.
But yeah, maybe if he's still carrying a slight knock in sort of the early part of this week, then maybe Guardiola looks at that and goes, well, I'll put him on the bench and put Grealish on at the weekend instead. But yeah, there's loads of options. And then if you add Gundogan into the mix, if he is signed by then that's another one who's possibly going to be on the bench. And, you know, what does it say for the future of Mateus Nunez? That's what we've got to think about, I suppose. But
yeah. Yeah, quite. And Dom, Rich mentioned Calvin Phillips there. Like, ultimately for him this season, I just want him to have a really good season. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd echo that. And I was pleased that deal went through, because when I saw him being linked with Everton, it was like, that just doesn't. And obviously, they had a rip roaring start, as they tend to. But. Yeah, I found it so odd that was the deal that was being pushed. You think about this is a guy who came through and blossomed under Marcelo Bielsa, you know, dictating the play, you know, playing Bielsa football, you know. But it seems because he's big and northern, he's a target for good football men, capital G, capital F, capital M. And yeah. It didn't work under David Moyes. I think it wouldn't have worked under Dyche, just be like with his head up in the air chasing balls around the Goodison while everyone's having the latest mutiny. I just, when I saw Ipswich and Fulham were in the mix, I thought, I hope he goes to either of them, because, you know, McKenna and Silva are good coaches who will use him properly. And yeah, I mean, I think even though people were saying he looked like a latter day Carlos Puyol when he played at centre half on the on City's summer tour, I think it's fair to say that he's done in Manchester and it's been an absolute nightmare for him. And yeah, I'd echo your thoughts. He seems like a nice lad and you want him to sort of come out of that well. And I think he's got an infinitely better chance of coming out of it well at Ipswich than he would have had if he'd gone to Everton.
Yeah. Rich, are you happy with the signing?
Yeah, I echo your thoughts there. If he went to a Dyche, I think he would have struggled under McKenna. We hope that he gets the form back that he had at Leeds under Bielsa. We play normally with a double pivot, you know, getting the ball off the goalkeeper or your defenders and then sort of dictating play from there. Look, he just needs to play football, doesn't he? Because he's just had, a couple of years at yours where he hasn't played. But when you've got Rodri in front of you, it's probably natural that he's not going to. He probably went to West Ham. Was he even that fit when he was chucked in there? Probably not. So he's at, what is he, 28 now? I think he's at a good age. Look, when he was linked, I thought there is no chance we're signing Calvin Phillips. And it was, the deal was done really, really quickly. So, and he does seem like a nice guy. I remember watching the, I think it was the Leeds United Till I Die on Amazon when COVID was on, and he was on there, and he just seems like a nice guy. I see his interview when he'd signed for the club last week, and he just comes across as a real nice, fun character. And you just hope that he plays football. Look, he was, what, England's player of the tournament in 2021 at the Euros, and Gareth Southgate was still waxing lyrical about him this summer, weren't he, that he wasn't there. So, yeah, if he can get back to somewhere near his best form, I think he'll be a real asset for us throughout the season.
Yeah. Right, so it's time to put our money where our mouth is, because it's charity bet time. We won on the charity bet again on last week's show, so it's now 2 from 2 so far this season. It means we've already raised £200 for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They're back ahead of the Ipswich game to collect donations of food and money for the Trussell Trust. They're in the usual spot under the bridge by Asda, so go and see them if you can. They also need volunteer help this season. Nick from the group explains.
Last season, we raised over 3 tonnes of food, which was incredible, and donations therefore accounted to over 5,000 meals going directly to help Manchester Central Food Bank support people really suffering an emergency crisis, needing to put food on the table. Things have actually been even worse for them over the past 6 months. They were close to cutting down on referrals and stopping people coming in at their 3 locations at Harper Hay, Openshaw and Ardwick. But City fans have helped to tide them over. You know, where we, once again, City fans are the biggest regular donor to Manchester Central Food Bank through us at the Food Bank Support Group. So, yeah, again, City fans have been fantastic. But, yeah, after, you know, it's, I think I've run the numbers as well, 83 collections we've done, hundreds, if not thousands of hours put into it. But overall, you know, 21,000 emergency meals to people in need across Manchester. That's what we've done since we started back in 2020, which is brilliant. But, you know, within our small group, that we've really realised this year that our capacity is massively stretched, you know, due to work commitments and personal circumstances for the group. So, we're having to be serious. We're having to reduce women's collections this season. You know, men's ones are potentially at risk. So what we're doing is, obviously we don't want that to happen. We want to continue supporting the food bank where we can and supporting our fellow Mancunians. So you know, we're putting together a volunteer WhatsApp group. We're basically looking for any Blues who can, you know, afford to commit to helping us out before games a couple of times a season. Doesn't have to be a ton. You know, it's just to help give us that extra bit of capacity. And hopefully we can focus on doing more, again, to support people across our city who, through no fault of their own, are struggling. We all know people who are struggling. And, you know, things obviously have only just got worse after the pandemic. Inequality is not getting any better in this country. So, yeah, we're definitely sorted for Ipswich at home, though, this Saturday. Which so hopefully if anyone can come and, you know, say hello, even donate would be great. But even just come over and say hello. We're always there to chat. We're still at MCFC Food Bank on all socials and mcfcfoodbank@gmail.com if you want to get in touch with us. We'd be lovely to chat.
So that's Nick from the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. We're helping them with the charity bet. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles to try and raise some money. Let's start with our guest, Rich. What are you having for this one?
Well, I don't want to be too pessimistic. So I'm going to go 3-0 to City. I know when you messaged me, I said 3-0. I was hoping that you didn't think I meant 3-0 to us. Because I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah, but yeah, 3-0. Yeah, solid 3-0 win for you, and we come out of it pretty much unscathed and not too embarrassed.
Yeah, 6-1 if you're right for that one. So £60 will go into the kitty. Dan, what are you having for this?
I did want 3-0 initially, but so I've gone for 4-1 instead.
3-0 up to 4-1 takes us to 14-1 and £140 if you're right. Dom, give us the bad news from Richie's point of view.
Yeah, weird dominoes here because I wanted 4-1, but that had gone.
Oh, so excellent.
I've gone with 5-0, but I will do the disclaimer that it's not, I'm not being a dick. I think Ipswich will stay up. I really like McKenna. But I've just seen a lot of these games with newly promoted teams. Okay, similar to like when Luton played really well at City last year and lost 5-1. I think it's going to be something like that. And a lot of the goals possibly late on as well. I think it'd be one of those.
Yeah, well, if you're right, 12-1 and £120. You've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, head on over to begambleaware.org. Rich, thank you very much for joining us. I hope you enjoy your day on Saturday, and I hope it's you're the next new team at the Etihad, so it's it'd be nice to have a new opposition.
Yeah, cheers for having us on. Look, we'll enjoy the day, whatever happens, and we'll see you back at ours. I'm not sure when we play you in 2025, but hopefully you can have a good season and don't get your points deduction just yet.
I've just had a horrible thought. If City do get points deducted, they could end up going to Portman Road and being relegated. Oh, God.
Well, there you go.
Right, we are going to finish with this.
It's the listeners' questions. It's the listeners' questions. Don't be giving us lots of flannel or suggesting it's Ask the Panel, because it's not called that. All right. It's called It's the Listener's Questions. Make it thoughtful or inventive. Try to provide an answer incentive. It's the Listener's Questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Higgy. Get in touch on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email through the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. I'm also interested in getting voice notes this season. You can send them on Twitter by DM if you want to. Our DMs are open. Be interested to get a few of them to play out with questions. So if you fancy that, get one sent in. We're going to start with Tony on the emails this week, who says, why wouldn't City go back in for Gundogan if he's interested in coming back? And I mean, we've already kind of talked about the issues about the squad and the strength of the squad. But ultimately, Dan, I kind of feel like it's one of those where if he's available and if he wants to come back and he's kind of okay with his role not being kind of 30 games in the season, it kind of makes sense.
Oh, it makes loads of sense from a sort of, well, I mean, from an emotional perspective, I think it's a complete no-brainer. I'm so glad that he's coming back. I can't remember the last time I was this excited about a transfer, and it's, you know, it's weird because it's not the sort of most earth-shattering, groundbreaking one we've ever made. It's a fan favourite player coming back for one last dance, hopefully. And I'm, you know, when Gundogan left a couple of years ago, I was kind of philosophical about the time. I thought, well, he's gone out in the perfect way. You know, there's no topping what he did, lifting the treble as captain. It made sense for him to leave at the time. You know, I was happy for him that he got this opportunity to play for Barcelona, and I'm really disappointed for him in the way that it's gone for him there. And, you know, their loss is our gain ultimately. All that said, the kind of pragmatic side of me, as I touched on earlier, does kind of think, well, is that the position that we need to fill this summer? What does it say for someone like James McAtee, who's been talked about over the summer as someone who's going to get loads of minutes this season, going to get a chance to show what he can do? Is that now denying him an opportunity that he would have otherwise got? Is it a bit short-termist from City to bring back a 33, nearly 34-year-old on a one-year deal that maybe we don't necessarily need? You know, maybe it's sort of upsets the, not harmony, but like the way that things were going with the game at the weekend, like I said, you know, with Kovacic having a good game. What does it mean for Kovacic now? What does it mean for Mateus Nunez, by the way? Are they going to sell him? Like, surely there's no chance of him getting a game anytime soon now, or even less chance than there already was. So I think there's things to consider that, you know, it might not be the perfect transfer for what City need right now, but I'm just, like I said, I'm really glad he's back and I'm looking forward to seeing him. I think he could have a role to play, a big role to play. You know, we know what he's like at the end of the seasons when he pops up and starts, turns into Ronaldo and starts scoring goals. So yeah, fantastic that he's back. But yeah, it's a strange one. It's come out of the blue, hasn't it, really?
Yeah. How are you feeling about it all, Dom?
I think it's just, yeah, can't we have nice things? Of course, it's great. It's fair to say that he couldn't have scripted a better farewell, but it's not like, I mean, God, how bad would he have to be to tarnish everything he did? I mean, he'd probably have to testify against the club at a Premier League panel or something, you know? Yeah, I think if we look at City's, you know, aims for the window, they wanted cover for Rodri, who could also play further forward, because as we just discussed with Calvin Phillips, you know, I mean, there was many things why it didn't work for Phillips, but signing just Rodri cover as like a specialist is a bit of a zero-sum game. Yeah, it's not like he'll need any chance to get up to speed. He knows everyone very well.
If he gets elected back onto the captaincy board, does that not Walker off it?
I mean, God, a lot of people would love that, wouldn't they? I don't know. I guess it does stop Ruben Dias getting elected and then turning it into a dictatorship, which I'm sure he would. It's hard to see a downside. I take the criticism of it does kind of look a little bit short term and mix and match. But if City, you know, if the idea was someone like Bruno Guimaraes or someone of that ilk, and they've not managed to get someone, you know, we mentioned Matias Nunes, who does seem to be in a little bit of a cul-de-sac now with this. Surely bringing in someone like Gundogan, who you know can do the job, if you can't get like a £100 million player or whatever, that's better than, because you know Nunes, as we understand, came in last season after not being able to get Bellingham, not being able to get Rice, and if you work down the list to someone who's like just not going to quite be there, I think that's a bigger problem than taking a punt on bringing a club legend home. Mm. So yeah, why not?
Yeah, and just quickly, Dan, as well, you mentioned before that one of your Celtic friends was talking about Kyogo Furuhashi. What's he been saying about him? Because obviously City have been linked with him.
Well, he's absolutely devastated. That's how much they rate him up there. They're all huge fans of him, and he's been superb for them over the years. And I think they've had a bit of a thing with, since Big Ange was the manager there, Japanese players, a bit like we had with Georgian players in the 90s, where they've had loads of them. But I think he's the standout one, the one that you could see playing at a higher level than the Scottish Premier League or Japanese football. You know, he looks really good, I think. And, you know, he's towards the end of his 30s. He's not a like-for-like player for Haaland, but he can be a decent backup for Haaland, I think. You know, I think he's only 5'7" or something, so he's a bit of a short king. But his movement's really good. He's quick. His finishing's really good. I think if City can create chances for him, he'd score a few goals. How much he would actually play, I don't know, but I think it's that perfect kind of signing that's been talked about, of bringing someone in who wouldn't have an expectation to be playing every week, wouldn't have a big ego, wouldn't kick up a fuss, you know, like someone like Ivan Toney probably would if he came in. So again, that seems like a bit of a no-brainer for City. If they can get it done, I think he'd be an interesting player and one that could surprise a few people with his quality.
Yeah, you said towards the end of his 30s. I just checked, 29. You meant end of his 20s. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. I also said Gundogan left 2 years ago when it was actually last year. So my concept of time is all over the place today, isn't it?
Excellent.
Just a quick thing on Kyogo being 29. There is a little bit of a thing with Japanese footballers and like guys who come through the system over there. A lot of them do start late in terms of their professional career, because university football is really strong over there. So basically they go and get their degree and play out there. So it's a little bit of sort of, you know, not dissimilar to the American football college system. So like, I remember a lot of people were surprised when they saw Matoma was already 26 when he was ripping up the Premier League last season. So he's 29, but he's a young 29. Admittedly, it seems he's a young 29 with a shoulder that keeps falling out. So, you know, there's things to unpack there, but it's not like
that guy, that Mayora, who's like 57.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still doing a job.
Well, this is it. You know, if he's the heir to that guy, he's very much in the infancy of his career. So yeah, it's a lot of people go, you'd sign in a 29-year-old from Celtic, but an elite Japanese footballer in 29 is a little bit different.
Yeah, just think, what age did Roger Miller retire at?
Well, his official age, or how old you were at the time, wasn't it, Roger Miller?
Yeah. Well, I can confirm as well for you, Dan, that time has beaten us, and that this is the end of this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks also to my guests for this one, Dan Burke.
Thank you very much.
And Dom Farrell.
Cheers, lads.
There is a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show coming up shortly. That was City Heaven, City Hell, focusing on games with Southampton. And it's available from patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. You can now get some Blue Moon Podcast merch as well. We've worked really hard on the designs of all the products to make sure that they fit the vibe of what we're going for with the podcast. So if you want an exclusive City t-shirt, hoodie, mug or print, including several Wembley 99 designs, check out our Twitter pinned tweet. Just go and have a look at Blue Moon Podcast. I'm back next week to review the game with Ipswich, so I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can, and don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
It was bedlam after that goal, and the players summed it up as well. I think I recall one of our injured players running the whole length of the pitch, and Pep had to apologise to the ref after for going so mad. It was just a pile on. It was everything. Yeah, it was great and really did kind of set the wheels in motion for a wonderful title win.
In everything in the aftermath as well, that was the Nathan Redmond game, Kieran, where Pep had a nice little chat with him afterwards.
Oh my word, yeah.
He was just congratulating Nathan, apparently, about how well he was, how brilliant he was as a player. And if anyone believes that, then, you know.
The old Pep on-field coaching after all of that. That was also famously the night that there was a photograph taken in the dressing room, and we discovered that David Silva had quite a bit of junk in his trunk.
I didn't realise that either. I didn't realise that was the game. What a game of football to start with, yeah.
Pure heaven.
Yeah.
While we were speaking there, I googled junk in the trunk. That actually means you have a big arse. So apologies for getting that wrong.
I think most people listening do remember that picture quite well. So,
right.
Yeah.
I've written it down to check it out afterwards, yeah.
You can fill in the blanks.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.